Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth, with the sole purpose of advancing and enhancing the lives of women. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Hello, hello, hello. Good evening, loyal listeners. You have Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony DeMont.
And you're listening to the Living by Design show, and we will be with you this evening for the next 90 minutes, and we're very excited about that because we have a hot topic that we're going to be covering tonight, and there was so much demand for this topic that we decided to go ahead and extend the show to 90 minutes to ensure that we cover every aspect of single parenting because this topic is so very important. Our children are so very important in our country, and we know that there's a crisis going on. We know that there is a lot of things where children are having some serious issues and bringing guns to school and just, you know, their mindsets are just not in a healthy place. So we want to make sure that we cover every aspect of single parenting because single parents need all the help that they can get, and we're going to provide that for them tonight. Right, Tony?
Absolutely.
So, we're going to be talking to Joanne Cutler, and she is a great expert in that topic, and we'll get to more about her credentials here shortly. I want to make a couple of announcements. Tony and I have been talking about this for quite a while, and we're very excited to share some information with you. I have a blog, and what we're going to do is each week after our radio show has concluded, we are going to continue the discussion on my blog, and I am going to post this in the chat room, and I want to welcome everyone that's coming into the chat room. We really appreciate you guys joining us this evening. But we are going to start featuring conversations, comments, questions. We're going to welcome all your questions and comments about the show topic of the week, and if there's any show topics that you're interested in hearing about, we also want you to post that as well. So we're going to ask you to please visit the blog after the show is over and give your comments about what you liked about the show, what you didn't like about the show, and just pretty much give us your feedback. So the blog is interactive for you to have an opportunity to stay in touch with us more than just weekly. I know Living by Design comes to you on a weekly basis, and that's great, and we love doing that. But we also want to stick close to you throughout the week. You know, Tony, you know, as we discussed, it's kind of like going to church. You know, you go to church on Sunday, and then throughout the rest of the days of the week, you really need that kick and that motivation and that, you know, that uplifting to get you through the rest of the days of the week, right? So we're gonna provide that.
Yeah, it'll give folks an opportunity more than anything else to continue the dialogue, continue the conversation. And even if they have some ideas, that'll be great because whenever you're trying to do a show that is for the audience and supporting the thoughts and the mindset of your listeners, it's always good to hear what your listeners are feeling and what they're thinking. So them leaving this show and going to your website and making their comments and concerns on the blog is going to be a great, great addition.
Yeah, we think it's going to be a wonderful addition because, as we stated, we know that there are so many other topics. This is a very important topic, and that's why we're extending the show to 90 minutes. And there are many other topics that are of interest to you guys, and your enhancement and your life advancement is what we're here for. So please check that out and make sure you stay in touch with us, okay? So just to touch on a couple of upcoming show topics for the week, and then I want to just jump right into bringing Joanne on the line. Next week, we're going to be talking to Miss Barbara Corcoran, and Barbara has an amazing life story. She's a self-made millionaire, and she's going to share her story with us and how she had 20 different jobs in her life before she finally found the true meaning of success. And once she found her passion, then she was able to just, the sky was the limit, and we're really excited to talk to her next week. And the following week, we will be talking about the topic of clearing the clutter, chaos, and confusion from our lives by overcoming the pack rat syndrome. And Tony, I know you told me I'm probably not saying that right. It's probably not called the pack rat syndrome, but that's how I describe it, because when you have a lot of clutter in your home and you have a lot of clutter in your space, then that pretty much sucks the energy from your life. And I know you may know a little bit more about that because you've worked with groups and organizations that have had those types of issues. So I think you said the correct phrase is hoarding?
Yeah, hoarding. Folks
hoarding.
Who, and there's so many different kinds of hoarding as far as how it affects your lives, and there's so many different things that cause people to hoard. So whether it was something that's a learned behavior, or it's always attributed to other things that have gone on in your life, whether it was as a child or something that happened to you dramatically within your adulthood, it caused you to start doing those kinds of things.
Right, right. So we're going to be talking about that. And then the following week after that, we're going to have Dr. Lisa Love. And Dr. Lisa Love is the best-selling author of Beyond the Secret. Her book is amazing. It's a bestseller. And actually, when I talked to Dr. Lisa, she was explaining how she's been studying the law of attraction since the early 80s. And she's going to join us to talk about her book. And she's also going to talk about the reason she came up with the title of her book, which is Beyond the Secret. And I'm going to kind of leave that for that show, because it's quite a bit involved, that she's going to talk about how some of the things that the secret actually missed. And she's going to fill in some of those gaps for us on that show. So those are the upcoming show topics, and I'm very excited about those topics coming up. So we are going to jump right into our topic this evening, because single parenting is so very important. How many of us has actually been touched by that, whether we're a single parent ourselves or whether we know someone that's a single parent? It's a hard, difficult job. And Tony, I'm sure you can attest to that, because you're in the situation. You have adult children, and you know, so I know it's something that is near and dear to your heart. So we're going to go ahead and bring Joanne on the line. And Joanne, are you with us?
I'm here.
How are you doing this evening?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, I really appreciate you being here this evening, because this topic is extremely important. And I'm sure you heard me mention a little bit about how important it is. Our children are in a state of crisis. I really believe that. I mean, there are so many situations where our children are getting involved in things that just, you know, and I don't want to put the blame on the parents. Please don't, you know, I don't want to send that message out there. That's not what I mean. But I just think that parents need all the help they can get.
Oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Why don't you start out by just telling us a little bit about your background?
Okay. Well, I'm a single parent just to begin with. And
right.
I was very blessed to meet someone about 9 years ago who changed my whole perception on parenting, on life. It actually changed the woman and mother I am. And it all is within the basis of unconditional love, knowing what that is. Really, we all want the same thing, and I was on the treadmill of life like most of us are, with working and having to do everything myself, and really wasn't conscious of what I was doing, how I was behaving, and really was just doing the best I knew how to do with the knowledge that I had. And when Colleen Hoffman-Smith, my mentor, introduced me to this process called the Inner Workout, it just totally changed my perception. I thought I knew what love was. I thought I was happy, but there was something needling at me that that told me, no, I'm not. And I kept searching for things outside of myself. I kept looking for things, including my children, to fill that void. And finally found how to fill it myself. And it changed everything. And that's in terms of now what I share with parents is to help them find that place within themselves to create the peace and happiness and love, really, that we all want. There's, what, 6 billion people on the planet. We all want the same thing, but how do we get it? And I learned how, and that's what I teach others.
That's excellent. Absolutely what we need here on our show tonight. Well, what I'd like to kind of start out by asking, and Tony, please just jump in, you know, whenever you want. I'd like to know, do you know what some of the stats are on single parenting? I mean, I know there are a lot of single parents out there. Do you have any stats on that?
I think I heard there's over 14 million. I think it's just in the U.S. alone.
Hmm.
And I think about over 80% of them are moms. So it left about 22 million children who are being parented by a single parent. Huge, huge numbers.
It is a huge number. Well, and I can believe that most of them are moms. Wow.
Well, and it's so unfortunate because, of course, going back then one step as to why there's so many single parents, a lot of it is because of breakdown in relationships. So why are the relationships, you know, breaking down? Why is divorce rate so high? And this is all tied in to what I'm going to be sharing with you, or what I hope to be able to share with you, in terms of, you know, why do we break up relationships? Why do we leave? What's going on? What creates the behaviors within us that stops the flow of love in our relationships, and that stops the flow of love or our children feeling love? I love sharing that there's a dreaded F word out there, and it's not the one you think. And it's spelled F-E-E-L. And a lot of us were not grown up or brought up, pardon me, in touchy-feely homes, open homes where we were taught what to do with our feelings. And as a result, our kids don't know what to do with theirs. And so they express them however they're taught. And so whether it is through bullying or picking up guns or just expressing, they don't know what to do. It's like we're all like time bombs out there sometimes because we just get so overwhelmed with our emotions that we just explode, whether we're a long-time suppressor or whether we're someone who just ignites very quickly. Either way isn't healthy. So what can we do with our emotions? How can we go in and learn how to create a safe place for our children to communicate about their feelings so they don't have to go out and display them with behavior?
Now, when you do your counseling, do you counsel parents and children or just parents?
Both.
Oh,
both.
Okay.
Yeah. What I've done in my own family is I've broken the cycle. And if I may, I think something that could really help to explain to the listeners and just for me to share a little story that I wrote that would kind of tie it all in. Would that be okay if I did that?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Okay. And by the way, hi, Tony.
Hi, Joy.
Say hi. Okay, and it's all about awareness. And that's what I do in my coaching practice, is I teach people to become self-aware and to take responsibility. So the story is called Breaking the Cycle. When I was younger, I always knew that I wanted to be two things in life, a teacher and a mom. The first came true for me as I taught swimming throughout my high school and university summers. In 1991, after 3 long years of trying, I finally realized my dream of being a mom. Giving birth to my daughter, this beautiful bundle of love and joy, was an unforgettable moment in my life, as was the miraculous birth of my son just 19 months later. It wasn't until I became a parent that I realized that my most sought-after desires were so connected. As my children grew through the infancy, toddler, nursery, grade school, and middle school years, I began to see how important a role model I was for them, and I did the best I could with the knowledge that I had. However, the increased stress that accompanied this new role was sometimes difficult, and I believed at that time that it was my children who caused some of the stress and discontentment in my life. One day I sent my son to his room for misbehaving, and he was so mad at having to stay in his room that he began to slam his door repeatedly. I could feel the blood boiling as I rushed to the bottom of the stairs and yelled at the top of my lungs for him to stop. I realized in that moment that I was acting in a way I vowed that I never would. But something came over me that was so strong and uncontrollable that I couldn't stop. I remember another experience with my daughter when she was 3. She had very proudly made her bed before going to nursery school. And as I went about my morning routine, I straightened out her bed. My godmother was visiting us, and as she witnessed what I had done, she said, "Don't you think she's going to notice that she didn't make her bed that way when she gets home? What she will take from that is that she didn't make it good enough for you. Who needs the bed neat and tidy, you or her?" She then commented, "There's no need to worry, Joanne. By the time she's 30, she will know how to make up a bed." I laughed at the silliness, but also saw the huge message I was sending my daughter. The notion of having to be perfect was my issue. So many times I had had a rough day at work, was exhausted from running on the treadmill of life, was frustrated with having to do it all myself as a single mom, or was heavy with worries about money or relationship issues. My kids might have wanted to share something exciting with me, needed some attention, or were maybe fighting with each other, and I would react by either yelling at them or withdrawing. Then I would feel guilty for my behavior, but it was too late. The damage had already been done. I love my children with all my heart, and my intention was never to hurt them. Others have shared similar experiences with me, and I have compassion for them, as I know, too, that I was behaving the only way I knew how. I've witnessed both privately and publicly the emotional and physical abuse that takes place on a regular basis in our world, and we need to do something to break this cycle. We teach our children how to behave by our example, and the cycle we are continuing could be one that we learned as a child. We've long forgotten or maybe buried how we felt as children when we were yelled at, scolded, or felt disapproval, disappointment, or lack of love from our parents. I believe our children are experiencing the same thing now, and they can't find the voice any more than we could to say to us, "Please don't yell at me, that doesn't feel good," or, "Mom, Dad, why are you always so disappointed in me? Why won't you listen to me? Why can't you love me just the way I am?" I know that my life became easier and less stressed once I took responsibility for my feelings and saw how I imposed those feelings onto my kids. The control, resentment, projection of anger, the shutdown, disapproval, and disappointment, all because they weren't doing what I wanted them to or behaving the way I thought they should. In wanting to be the best parent I could, I started to take a good look within myself and through the eyes of my children. My mentor helped me to see how I could have done things differently and how my behavior and reactions impacted how they behaved, not only as children, but how my behavior created a template that they would follow when they became parents themselves. I saw how I was a container of all sorts of feelings, and I had never felt safe enough to express them. And when my children, or anyone else for that matter, triggered me, all of those unfelt emotions exploded out of me, and I, of course, blamed them. I had continued a cycle of unhealthy behavior, and I wanted to do it differently. I'm no different than any other parent. And I thought I was doing a great job, and I was. I was doing the best with what I knew at that time. My children and I now joke about the fact that they didn't come complete with a manual, and I fully admit to them that I'm not perfect. I'm open to listening to my children now, and when they feel me getting agitated, remember I'm not perfect, or when my recovering control freak side starts to rear its ugly head, my children feel safe enough to point it out, which reminds me that I'm stepping back into my old patterns. This issue is mine to take care of and to let go of. It feels good now to be able to laugh at my own behavior, and I'm grateful and continually thank my children for sharing their observations. There's a familiar phrase that says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Our children can teach us so much if we let them express themselves and create a safe place for them to share their feelings and try not to take their expressions personally or view them as a sign of disrespect or backtalk. I can honestly say that I don't yell at my kids anymore. I'm so blessed to have such wonderful children, as we all are. They are such gifts. And mine taught me how to take a look at and take ownership of how I showed up in life. Once I shifted, everything in my life did as well. It's an ongoing process for me to healthily take care of my emotions, and it's so clear to me now that my ultimate desires of being a mom and a teacher had to occur in that order, to learn how to be the best mom I could be so I could teach my children. And this has inspired our family to break the cycle. Sorry, I needed some water there a little bit. Stumbled. But that's really... Pardon me?
I said that was a beautiful story.
Well, thank you. And it really speaks to everyone, I believe, and anyone I've shared that with. They get it. We basically learn as kids how to behave or how to work around our parents' moods in order to get the love. We just want love. We just want love. And when we're born, innocent babies, when everyone on this call, every single child that is born, if we could hear the message that they come wrapped up in, which is this: Dear Mom and Dad, I'm so excited to have arrived, your precious little miracle. I've brought you a gift, the connection of love, contentment, and peace that's within me. And I know you can feel it right now in your heart and in your soul. I wish to keep connected to this beautiful feeling. So if you happen to forget your connection while I'm growing up, please promise me that you'll keep finding your way back to reconnect. Because if you don't, I'll lose mine too. Thank you for bringing me into this world and for helping me do my job to inspire this connection to love, peace, and happiness to be a part of our lives forever. Love, your tiny little bundle of joy.
Right. Now, Joanne, I wanted to ask, when it comes to that single parent attitude, because one of the challenges with single parents, and I heard it in the story, is that overwhelming feeling of you have to be and do everything. How do the single parents combat that overwhelming urge to be perfect? Because as your story stated it, we spend so much time trying to be perfect that we spend more time showing our imperfections in that attempt. How can we combat that?
To feel the overwhelmment is the first step, is to actually go in to our feelings, like to really be with them and to let them move through us, because we keep them so bottled up that, like, we're so full of all of the stress and anger and resentment and hurts and disappointments and everything. So it's really hard to be, I guess, that role model or that having it all together kind of parent in that place. But we're not. I mean, none of us are perfect. We're perfect in our imperfections. And that's the first thing I said to my kids as I was learning, you know, this process of trying to rediscover myself and learning how to cope with the stress of doing it all by myself, is really just being with the feelings that came up and admitting to my kids, you know, you guys didn't come with a manual and I'm not perfect and mom's kind of feeling stuff right now. I'm going to go be with it and it's not you. If we could just say that to our kids, it's not about you. You know, when we're in our stuff and overwhelmed with life and financial issues and maybe the kids are acting up or whatever it might be, it's really not them, what we're feeling. Like the buttons that get pushed within us or the feelings that we're feeling, they didn't put them there. They're in us. They triggered them. And that's the difference. That's the difference in looking at parenting from that point of view, is that our kids are all, you know, people in our life, and especially our children and our partners, they're going to trigger us. So I teach people or inspire them, just hold the space for them to feel that stress, that exhaustion, that, oh, I don't want to do it anymore. I can't do it this way anymore. And I just hold that space so that they can feel it and really go into it, because we deny the feelings. We keep trying to push them down.
And I just wanted to kind of add on to a little bit of similarity to what Tony just asked, just going a step beyond that. And he mentioned that, you know, sometimes parents feel the need to do it all and try to do it all. And also along that line, how can they, and sometimes I know it gets difficult for single parents because they're dealing with the everyday stress of work and, you know, maintaining the financial stability of the child and maintaining the home. And, you know, they get caught up in all of those everyday stresses and then their own emotional issues with themselves. How do they try to get beyond those everyday stresses to try to stay focused on showing the child love? Because it really gets difficult for them sometimes. And how can they just get beyond that to, you know, to try to stay in that right mindset?
Well, it's actually about a heart set more so than a mindset, from my perspective, and it's to go to the other side of all of that stress as opposed to trying to pretend it's not there and to connect to that love. You see, the love that we share with our kids, that love that we feel, like imagine that first day our children are born and this precious, just totally beautiful miracle that we're holding, that space, in that moment of love and the peace and the contentment that we feel, that space is always in us, always. But it's the other stuff that covers it up. So it's not about setting that stuff aside. You actually have to move through it to get back to that connection so that you can authentically be in that space of love for your child. And so that's what this process that I learned is called, the inner workout, and it's to get this stuff out, because children just want us to love them, and they don't know where that connection is if we don't show it to them, if we don't have it within ourselves. So to be honest with them, going, you know, mommy's not feeling, you know, mommy's feeling a little stressed right now, and you know, I've got some stuff on my mind, and it's not about you, but I'm just going to go and be with it for a while, and then I'm going to come back, you know, to be with them, so that our children feel us present. They feel the love within us, but we've got to go and find it. We've got to go and connect to it within ourselves so that we can bring that to the relationship with our kids. Does that make sense?
You know, Joanna, I wanted to also ask, because I grew up in a single parent household. My mom raised us, and I know the one thing that I remember about my mom, even to this day, even though I knew she was very vulnerable, it was her thing to make sure that she didn't show a lot of vulnerability. She made sure that she did not let us know those pains and those weaknesses. Now, to this day, as her son, as an adult, I realized that, you know, that was a kind of an air that she was putting on, because she didn't take the time to show us that. But I look back and I think, if I would have seen more of that in her, I would have thought differently of her. And not as in a negative thing, but I would have thought it's okay to be that way. But she spent so much time making sure that she showed this strong woman that I think that it hurt her in the long run and stressed her out and really kept her kind of sad sometimes, because she was not able to just kind of break down and kind of let it go and talk to us that way.
Right. And to be honest, Kathy and Tony, it's this, of course, is a single parenting show, and this is, you know, you've got callers who are single parents and we're addressing the issues. But what I'm offering, what I share with people, it's not just single parents, obviously, that come in and see me for coaching or that I speak to. This, what we're addressing, is for everybody. It's single parents, yes, they're the extra maybe added stress because they're doing it all alone, but the emotions, the stress, the not being vulnerable like your mom, Tony, not sharing, not being intimate, communicating about feelings, this happens in every single relationship and within every single family. It's not just single parents.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to the phone. I'm sorry, were you done? I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. I'm going to go to the phone lines. We have quite a few phone lines coming in here, and I want to make sure we get some questions. So I'm going to go ahead and open the line for area code 212. You're on the line. Do you have a question, or are you just listening?
I have a question. Hey, Kathy, this is Gerald Brown from the Bottom Line Sports Show. Just really, really appreciate your show and listening to the show. I think it's a great topic. My question is, I obviously just being a an individual that was raised by a single parent, is the fact is that is it more nowadays that you don't hear about the single fathers or the fathers, the male figures that the single parents raising the children as opposed to the females?
Excellent question.
Well, I think we're not hearing as much about it, actually, Gerald, because when I was looking just briefly at the statistics, it seems as though over 80% are women, are the mothers. So, but I know lots of single dads, and I know a lot of, you know, it's just as important, I believe, for the fathers to be so involved, you know, with their kids. And many are. I know so many. I think sometimes it's not spoken about, and maybe sometimes not always in a positive light. You know, that they're, you know, not saying good things about, you know, some of the dads that have taken off or what have you. But it's very, you know, I think single father, single mother, it's, I don't know that there's any difference, certainly in terms of how to create that relationship with your child. It's the same thing, whether you're a father or mother.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. I'll continue to listen to the show. Kathy, great job. I really appreciate all the emails. And from one blog show, to another, continued success to you, and I'll be listening.
Thank you very much for your call and question. We greatly appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Now, and let me just ask you, I'm going to shift gears here a little bit, Joanne, and I know we've been talking quite a bit about, you know, just the mindset and how we need to interact and communicate with our children. But let's move to preteens, teenagers, and that group of children. That's when the challenges become a little bit different and a little bit more, I guess, difficult, for lack of a better word. So how would you coach a parent that's raising a teenager that's just absolutely insubordinate and rebellious and they have problems? So how do you coach those? And I'm going to go back to the line, area code 818. I see you there, and I'm going to get to you shortly here. So if you could just, you know, expand on that a little bit, that would be wonderful, Joanne.
Sure, no problem. As a mother of two teenagers myself, this is a perfect example, and a cute little anecdote is as a single mom, I have a 17-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old son, and currently not in a relationship, so I'm truly single. And I walk places, I go places, and people look at me and they know the story and they go, "Well, how come you're smiling?" And I just kind of have to laugh, because my perception and my going into the preteens right from the get-go is I didn't believe the fact that teenagers had to be rough, that my teenagers had to be like I was, because I know I was a rebellious teen. So with going into that, it created a whole different scenario. It's all about, you know a lot about the law of attraction, or there's a lot of talk about it, etc. And of course, living by design and creating your life. If you want to create a life of struggle with rebellious teenagers, then you can do that. And if you choose not to, you can also do that. It's all a question in terms of your mindset on that one. But with teenagers or even toddlers, if you're talking about, for example, anger and they're getting into power struggles, I find that our children are wonderful barometers to show us what we need to look at. And so when we're in a power struggle, it's all about control. And usually rebellion, especially in teenagers, comes from having been controlled. And as a recovering control freak myself, I'm going to be, you know, always working on this, and my daughter's my wonderful barometer for that. You know, if I kind of slip into these patterns of saying, you know, "Do you have any homework?" I mean, I have to stop myself. But so that's as far as the behaviors of the teenagers, and they're lashing out, and they're, you know, being disrespectful and speaking inappropriately. It doesn't make it appropriate, but what I inspire the parents to do is to look at what it's triggering in them. And once they shift, the anger or whatever's coming up in them, then the child, the opportunity is there for the child to shift. It really always comes back to the parent.
I agree with you there.
Pardon me?
Well, I'm just saying I have to agree with you with the fact that it all comes back to the parent.
Yeah, like I mean, I had an incident, for example, probably about 4 months ago with my son. And he was not in a good mood. There were things happening. He's not particularly fond of school, et cetera, et cetera. And anyway, he went into a, for lack of a better, like a hissy fit or what have you, and he was being belligerent and all of that. And so I just practiced what I do all the time, and I just breathe, and it doesn't make it appropriate. I asked him to leave the space to go up to his room, and when he had calmed down, we would talk, and he finally did after a few askings, and he calmed down. But I think the point was that I remained calm. I didn't have anything in me to get triggered because I worked on my button. The button wasn't there for him to push, in other words. So I could just be that space of love and compassion for him while he was having a tantrum. And then it eased out. Then we were able to talk once he was finished having his fit. Does that make sense?
Yes,
like,
if
you don't engage in it, it can't continue.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'll tell you, Joanne, there is... When I sit there and I think about this, because I was that, your son, I was that kind of guy, but there was a sense of, for lack of a better term, absolute fear, because when I was coming up, and of course it was a different time, my mother, as I said, was, I mean, and she was a disciplinarian, so there wasn't a question of talking back, or there wasn't a question, and I could have...
Oh, Tony, we've all been there. You're right. We've been there.
Right, right. There wasn't a question of any of those kinds of things. So it was a different situation for me. It was, I could have been as angry as I wanted to be, and it wasn't even a question of going up to my room. I didn't even get a word. It was, I didn't even go there because of the fear. But the times have changed, and conversations are being had, and folks are trying to discuss, and parenting is changing only because of the differences in the way that society looks at it. And I think it's a good thing. I mean, I still carry some of the emotional scars of some of the things that went on between me and my mom. And if we would have handled them differently, as you said, they probably would have worked out best for both of us. But I listen to what you're saying, and I can see how they definitely can work and would have worked on me then. But I know there are a lot of adults that are listening and a lot of parents that are listening. And I'll say it this way. We have to take a look at letting go of the way that we were raised and allow the way that we were raised to be the past and learn a new way, because we know how it affected us. And so I'm glad you told that story.
Well, exactly. And that's what breaking the cycle is all about. And,
that's right.
You know, so when we look at these kids, whether they're bullying on the playground, whether they're they're picking up guns, whether they're whatever they're doing, if they haven't had a safe environment in order to express their anger, just like you didn't, Tony, and neither did I. I didn't dare. It wasn't okay to be mad. What did we do with it? But it's still in us. It was still in us. So it just got expressed another way. And so to create that space for our kids, and it's not to blame our parents either. It's not about blaming them. It's to understand that they did the best that they knew how, and we got some wonderful things from our parents. But the things that we didn't like as children, we have now created the same experience in our homes. And it's a really interesting thing to really look at. For example, there's usually a parent who was one that would, you know, fill us up or make us feel more loved, and one who, you know, would be more the harder one, for example. And so there is a parent who we would have more issues with and growing up. And so then we go and get married. And so this stands to the whole, how do we get to the single parenting issue to begin with? So then we go get married. And so when you look at the law of attraction, we attract a partner. And if every single person listening, and you guys too, think about the partner that you attracted in your relationships over the years, and maybe you married them, maybe you didn't, but think about the partner, and do they somehow exude the same energy? Did they have the same energy as that parent, one of your parents, and usually the one you had the most issue with? Not that they look like them or anything like that, but you felt the same way around them. You lost your power. You walked around on eggshells, or, you know, around their anger or whatever it might be. So then you go, oof, I don't like this. I'm out of here. And so we divorce. Right? We separate. We don't like it. Then we go and attract another relationship, the same energy, and we keep going on and on. But then, on top of that, we usually become it because we have no other form of learning how to be a parent than from the role models that we have. So what I inspire people to do is forgive, to let go, like you said, Tony, of the way we were parented. You have to let go of the resentments and the hurts and the disappointments and angers and all of that stuff we've carried as kids. And then also to take responsibility for those parts that are in us that we have now created the same situation for our children. If we could only swap places with our kids sometimes when we're speaking, when we're parenting, because we the words come out of our mouth before we even know it, don't they? Have you caught yourself doing that before, where the words come out and it's like, I swear my parents said that?
Yeah, and you know, Joanne, I think one of the things that happens in many instances in any parenting situation is a parent will do exactly that. They'll try this, they'll try that, and they'll remember the things that worked on them, but they'll forget how it made them feel.
Correct.
Because I know one of the things that used to always be said to me was that, you know, this is grown folks' business. If I wanted to speak up or I wanted to say something, it was, in other words, I'm too young to have an opinion about what it is I want to say. And what I learned as an adult is I have an opinion about everything because I was always told that I had to hold off on what I wanted to say. So I look now and I've got an opinion about everything and I speak up about everything and I don't let anyone shut it down, and I look at that and I go, okay, that was because my mom would always say, this is grown folks' business, you don't need to talk about this, you don't need to say anything, you don't speak unless you're spoken to, and that kind of thing. And so those are the kinds of things that have even affected me as an adult.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And guys, I'm going to just jump in here real quick and try to go to the phones again and get a question in. Area code 518, you're on the line. Are you listening or do you have a question?
Hi, Kathy and Tony and Joe. This is Allie, and I'm actually in chat, and I also have a show. I actually just wanted to sort of interject a little bit into the conversation because your chat room's flying by with all kinds of opinions, and people are certainly entitled to them. I have to agree with Tony on a lot of things. I think I'm around the same age as Tony. I'm 42, and our parents, you know, they enjoyed the dish towels, the hairbrushes, and so forth, and you know, that hard, almost dictatorship as when we were kids. And one of the things I wanted to share, Joe, with you is that in listening to your story, I could really resonate with a lot of the information that you were giving. And one of the things that I'd like to offer up for people that are listening is something that I did. I was a single mom for many years before I remarried, and my children were very young. When my first husband passed away, they were 4 and 7 years old. And, I said in the chat room, and of course Joe can't see it, but I've never hit my children, and my children today are 17 and 22, and both are aspiring chefs. My kids have never smoked, my kids never drank, and they were good kids. I think that's due in part to an experience that, you know, we had as adults with our own families, and in knowing that we wanted to change that energy, change that feeling of what we were putting out. So like my sister and I are completely different. I'm very loving and very attentive, and my sister is what I would call, you know, a cold fruit. And so are my sister's children, and they're 23 and 24. I think if you talk to the children with love, and I think if you instead of punishing them the traditional way that people just assume, you take away the TV, you take away this and that. I think, however, what I did and I found very effective was when the children misbehaved or when they had tantrums, and let's face it, children do, that's just in their nature, I just allowed them to go through it. I ignored it. And when they were done, because they weren't getting the negative attention they were actually seeking at that moment, I would sit down with them and ask them, now why am I going to take away the TV for a day? Or why am I taking away your toy for the day? And I would sit there and have an open discussion with them that young so that they understood what they were actually getting punished for. I didn't have to raise my hand. I didn't have to raise my voice. But what I did was I sat there until they could understand, well, I did this. Well, yes, that's what you did, and that's why you were getting punished. And I think that change in people, if they could change and they could start out with the children that young, because as my kids segued into their teens, now my daughter went through her little 14, 15 rebellious period, but at the same time, I actually handled it almost the same way, with the exception of course, now we get into Xbox and iPods and, you know, those other things, but when I sit and I make her realize exactly, you know, what it is that she's doing and why that behavior is not acceptable, I think talking to the children and really showing that energy of love, which, you know, we all know our parents loved us, they just had a funny way of showing it, you know, even to this day, I really don't get along too well with my mom, we think on different levels, and she never really agreed with the way that I did things, but I'm very grateful that my children turned out to be some amazing human beings. So being a single mom and a single dad, and that was something somebody else had brought up earlier, it is a very difficult job, and suffice as to what some people think in chat, it is a sacrifice. But it's one that you make when you become a parent. You know that your children come first, and then everything else in your life for you as an adult comes afterward. And I mean, that's what I did. And I don't think I would have changed anything. And I think there needs to be more support groups for single moms. I do a lot of work to try to help single moms because we've been there, done that. So, you know, more power to you. And I really hope that a lot of the people that are listening that have issues in their families and stuff really take the time to talk. Communication is so lacking. And that's the problem with a lot of the families is they don't communicate. There was a statistic, and I'm just going to say one more thing, you guys, that, you know, the average family, when we were kids, you know, 5, 6 o'clock, we all sat down around the dinner table no matter what, and we ate. And I know my mom was, like, seriously anal about that. Today, the families don't sit around the table and communicate. They don't have that dinner hour anymore. It's like, this one's on the run, that one's on the run, this one's doing that, this one's doing that. And that's where I think we need to step in as parents, as single parents, and even as families. And there's a lot of step families that go through these same things. You need to have that open line of communication. The children need to know that they need to respect you, not fear you. And at the same time, you, like Tony was saying, you didn't realize he could have an opinion. You have to allow them to have that opinion. You have to allow them to live in their spirit.
Well, thank you.
And you've made a lot of great points. And I'm just going to throw this question out for everyone, caller as well as Joanne and Tony. Is there a point when you should spank? I mean, at what stage do you get where you should spank? I mean, because you're right, communication is very, very important. But at what point do you say, okay, a spanking is warranted here and I'm going to have to do this?
I have a perspective on this. I don't believe there's anything that is that bad ever that a child could do, nor a human being, that we should ever raise a hand. The hand is the extension of the anger that's gotten triggered with whatever they've done. So if we take care of our anger, if we start taking care of our stuff and stop giving it to our kids or to other people in our life, but no one deserves that. No one deserves to be hit.
Ever.
I agree.
but we lose it. The point is we lose it. And I, you know, and I agree. Our first you know, children are so important, and I think the mindset or the heart set of parenting, the awareness of that it's a privilege to be a parent. It's a privilege
to
be a parent. And these children come to us, these loving, unconditionally loving children, come into our lives. And then it's great for a little while, but then all of a sudden we get triggered. I want to share something. This is before I learned how to do it a different way, because, I mean, I lost it all the time. I was sergeant, major, and I mean, because that's what I grew up with and that's what I became, and the disappointment and the control and all of that. But when my daughter was born and she was nursing, she couldn't have been any more than maybe, oh, I don't know, a week or two old. And I remember getting so frustrated because she couldn't latch on properly. So frustrated. I was with, you know, with her, blaming her. Of course, I didn't hurt her. I was not in that space. But I remember myself just getting so frustrated and blaming her that she wasn't latching on. And so it really triggered and really showed me just how it can just come out of nowhere. We just lose it. And that's when I think the spanking happens, you know, that we just lose it. We don't know what else to do. Because when our kids misbehave, when they start to get angry, when they start to have a tantrum, they've learned that, firstly, too, by us, because what happens when we want them to do something? When do they actually do it? When we get mad. So they know that, okay, you get mad, you get your way. So they learn that. So then they start to pull it, and that's where the teenager madness, of course, as well, that they're bigger and they're stronger, etc., but even toddlers. And, I mean, there was a woman who I knew, and she says, you know, Joanne, I don't know what to do. You know, my son, he's like, he was yelling at me, like, you know, all the time. And I finally said to him one day, I said, don't yell at me. Stop yelling at me. And this beautiful little angel had the voice at 5 or 6 to say, well, why not? You yell at me.
Hmm.
And you know, it stopped her in her tracks.
They're saying in the chat room, and I kind of don't even know how to answer this question myself, but there are other influences in our children's lives, as we all know, because they go to school and, you know, they're exposed to things in school, which they could be exposed to different mindsets. And when your child says to you, Mom, kiss my A, or Mom, I hate you, or something like that, they're saying in the chat room that that warrants a spanking. But is there any other way that you can handle extreme situations like that if your child tells you to kiss their, you know what?
Oh, my kids have said they hated me. You know, the question is, what? Okay, so for example, no matter what, whether it's your child or somebody else, when they say something, that, you know, your solar plexus just under your rib cage, okay, that little mm-hmm. place in there, and where you feel the ouch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you imagine not having that ouch there anymore? That it not affecting you? That you don't take it personally? That you know it's their expression of their own pain? That's the place that I guide and that I've learned to get to. That you're so connected to who you are, you don't believe in the lies that other people start shouting at you, including your kids. So the answer would be no. I don't
now,
believe there's anything that warrants a spanking.
I'm going to go ahead and go
child, if you raise a child to have a conscience, then
I'm
I
sorry?
Think, if you, when you raise your children and you teach them to have a conscience, I don't think there's a necessary beating for that kind of behavior, because we all do that. We did it as kids. We're not perfect, and our kids, I mean, my kids have said they hated me too, and then an hour later they came back, I'm sorry, Mom, I really didn't mean it, I was just mad. So
you have to
learn to not, and she's absolutely right, not take it personally. It's a matter of the energy. You know, take it in and let it out, because it's not.
And just not allow them to control your emotions by what they're saying to you. Just try to hold it together and
right,
push through
it.
Well, that's where this.
You don't own that energy. That energy is theirs. And if that's the way that they know how to release it, you know, then that's the way they do it. And of course you want to try to always be constructive about the way they release it. Let's face it, there are children that are doing things that are far worse than just, you know, saying kiss my tush. But, you know, it's a matter of, and then it goes back to the accountability again and responsibility of the parent and or parents, depending on if it's a two-family home, you know, a two-parent home. You know, so you, but that's energy that you don't want to take on. You let it go and you wait. And if the child sees that they're not getting a reaction out of you and you're remaining calm and you're allowing them to just vent, you know, it's like anything else. We as adults vent. You know, I'll call up my girlfriend and I'll vent to her because it's not anybody else's energy, so why give it to somebody else? It's the same thing with the children. You take it, you let them think that, you know, you have it, and you let it go. And then when they're calm and the energy around is more serene, then you bring up the conversation, okay, what was that about? You know, what's going on? Why are you so angry? I know it's not me. And that's a starting point. And everybody's saying, no, you know, that you need to hit your kids. Look, 3/4 of the kids that are violent today are because they were hit growing up. So something has to change someplace, and it has to start with us. That's where the accountability comes in.
Absolutely.
I agree.
And the child that is speaking disrespectfully to one of the parents, the whole point of this is to go back to the baby. The baby was not born disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
So in the relationship between mother and father, they, up until about, I think the books say about 5, they're done. They know how to behave. It's not about going to school and other people. They've already learned how to maneuver, how to behave, how to shut down, how to project based on those formative years at home with their parents. And just as we learned what relationship looks like by watching our parents, we also teach them by our relationships. So, for example, if we're the mother and being disrespected by our child, but we allowed ourselves to be disrespected by a controlling, angry husband, then, of course, that is being mirrored now by the kid because the child saw that, you see? And we allowed it as the mother.
And ladies, this is happening exactly as I thought it would. I am getting so many calls. I really want to try to get to some of these other callers so that they can get their comments, questions in.
Thank you so much for your comments.
You've been wonderful. Your comments were very, very helpful. So I'm going to go to area code 818. Are you listening, or do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question, actually. From what I understand, the topic is about raising your kids. And correct me if I'm wrong. Someone was saying about how there's, in general, there's never a time to hit your children, right?
Correct.
Okay, and I think another person, maybe it was the same person, maybe it was different.
Hello? Hello?
Okay, we may have lost the call.
I think we lost that caller. Okay, area code 580, you're on the line. Do you have a question?
Yes, ma'am. How you doing?
How are you?
Hi, this is Black Civilization. Okay.
Hey, Black Civilization. Thanks for calling in.
You know, they were talking about single fathers. And I think I had a conversation with Angelic. My thing is that my wife passed away 15 years ago.
Oh,
okay,
wow.
My daughter was 3, had 2 sons, 5 and 9. For the last 13 years, they're 23, 18, and 16. Okay? I have an older son, a chemical engineering student at Oklahoma State University, a senior. My other son in college right now, a freshman, on a scholarship, biology and football. Right? My thing is, right, you know, when people talk about raising kids, you know, we say sacrifice. It's not a sacrifice. It's a responsibility, first and foremost. It's never a sacrifice. Okay? And we get caught up too much in materialistic things. Right? I saw a grandmother that raised 9 kids, 6 boys and 3 girls, had the utmost respect till to this day, single. Right? And, yeah, she would blaze them every once in a while. So spanking and beating is 2 different things. When you beat somebody, you try to kill them. you try to beat them down. When you spank them, you're telling them certain things is wrong, and you're talking to them, and all well and good, right? I discipline my kids, you understand? And to this day, right, it's total respect. No airings in the air, no sagging pants, always I love you, and so on and so forth. Always getting calls and different things. My daughter's 16 right now, sitting in the kitchen, came from school, did her homework, and she's cooking, right? I had it, they wash dishes, men and women, boys and girls, wash clothes, fold clothes, and so on and so forth, right? It's us. It's not our ancestors what they did. It's us to this day. We don't know how to parent, right? And we talking about timeouts and all that other stuff. There's no such thing as timeout, right? There's a level of discipline for them to sit up here and say, look, you know, when I look at my kids, that's it. That's all I take now. In the last 5 years, I have not put my hands on my kids. All I have to do is look. They walk in this house, and that's it. How you doing, Dad? Before we hang up the phone, I love you, Dad, and so on and so forth. Yes, and I had spanked them before. So, you know, we have to get back into understanding what it is to be parent, right? And, you know, regardless of what it is, with no disrespect to anybody, right, you know, you have to get back and forget all these books and get back to parenting, get back to the basics.
And Black Civilization, I want to agree with you, because actually what you're saying is you're saying that there is a combination of both. It's not about beating, and it's not about trying to pulverize your children to the point of death. It's just a mindset, or I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but it's kind of a respect that you're trying to instill in your child with a combination of spanking, just to let them know I'm the one that's running things here. And you're combining it with communication and talking and reinforcement of love and letting them know this is coming from a place of love, and I'm doing this because I want to help you be a better person when you grow up and when you become an adult. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am. That's it in a nutshell. I'm also an educator. I work for the public school system, right? I'm a Title I individual, and I see this daily. I see how these kids come in, you know, and what is happening is that we speak into a level higher than these kids right now, because a woman in the hood right now don't hear this show. She don't read these books. We have to go out and teach them how to be parents, right? Because they don't go to the Hastings. They don't go to the bookstores and so on and so forth and buy these books to read. We have to go out there and teach them. You understand? And that's what's happening right now. We talk a lot, right? But we after 6 o'clock or after 4 o'clock, we leave our confines, we go home, and we forget about these people, and then we talk about these people, how they can't parent. Because they don't know. Because if you sit up here and look right now, you have a 31-year-old having a kid. They had a kid when they were 13, 14, 15, and 16, right? What can they teach that kid? Nothing. And their parents are younger. So the old ones, we that knows, have to go back and teach. We can't sit up here all the time, write books, because books is only for the individual who's sitting up here, sit up in his thing, right? And these bookstores and Amazon, right? Look at the people who goes there, not the people who really needs it.
Well, I really appreciate your comments, Black Civilization. I think we have Sandy on the line. So
go ahead, man.
Your comments were very valuable, and you know, I'm sure it helped a lot of people. I really appreciate you calling in. I'm going to bring Sandy on the line. Sandy, is that you? Sandy, how elegant?
Well, while we're trying to connect with Sandy, I wanted to ask Joanne this. Joanne, when you come across a parent that has the kind of, I don't want to say attitude, but has the kind of parenting skills that we just heard from, how do you deal with that kind of parent? Because there's going to be some conflict. It works in that household, but then do you tell parents what works for you, or is there a way of doing it that can work for everyone?
Well, I know the energy of the parent that was just speaking, because I grew up with it. And I was also it, so I understand it completely. And the way I see it is that we have a choice. We can parent from fear or from love. And I believe there's a difference. And so to raise our hand or to yell and to make our kids afraid of us, I mean, until I was about, oh, I kind of joke with my father about this too. I think I was about four, I think I was afraid of him until I was about 40, but not afraid that he'd hurt me. So that's the difference. I was not afraid that he'd hurt me, afraid that he wouldn't be proud of me, afraid that he wouldn't approve of me, that, you know, kids don't feel good enough. We don't feel good enough. I mean, how many of us, you know, have those places in us that we don't feel good? You know, we might be feeling really, really great, and then someone will come into the space, someone will come into the room, or someone will come into work, and all of a sudden we don't feel good about ourselves. We feel less than, we feel there's something going on. So the fear-based way of parenting is a way that a lot of people choose to go. And I know it's a way that I went too, and threatening and all that sort of thing. And it just, for me, all I did when I started to look at doing it differently is put myself in my kids' positions. I switched roles with them and remembered when I was a kid, like you, Tony, you know, if you go back and think of, okay, how did I feel when I was on the receiving end of that? And I didn't like it much. So I chose not to do it. So whatever we didn't like as a kid, chances are our kids aren't liking it either.
Absolutely. And I know it's kind of funny for me because I'm a grandfather now, and I've got a 2.5-year-old grandson. And I find myself talking to him. I mean, I may say something to him in a stern way. I may tell him no in a stern way, but I find myself explaining and asking, does he understand why I said what I said, and why did I, you know, stop him from doing this? And if I, and it's all about him understanding. And what's so amazing to me is I didn't get that kind of conversation, and I see how easy it is for me to have that conversation, and his mom and his grandmother and his aunt to have the conversation and explain it to him, and him actually get it that young. So we don't have to beat him up or beat him down. And I grew up being spanked, and well, I take it back. I grew up being beat because I was, and Kathy and I have had this conversation, I was a special child. I guess if you would have considered what I would have been one of those special needs children back in the day, but I would have needed, because I needed attention. And what happened to me a lot of times is I wanted attention. If my mother told me don't talk to her while she's on the phone, I would go ahead and talk to her while she was on the phone to try to get her attention.
Tony was very different.
I was one of the children. So when those kinds of things happen, it was, I found out later on, I just wanted my mom's attention, and I didn't care if it was a negative attention. And I find a lot of times, and I'm finding a lot of times, that's what kids are dealing with now. They just want that attention. And if you turn it around and you don't turn it into negative and turn it into positive and show it love, then their attitudes have a tendency to change.
Oh, yeah. That's all they want is their attention. But think about it. Think if everyone listening now and our, think about how present we really are with our kids. Like I created a CD called Breaking the Cycle, and I gave a lot of tips, and I do some exercises and things like that to try to help us you know, find that place where we can have an easier parenting experience. I don't believe it has to be tough. I really don't. I don't have that experience. It doesn't mean that stuff doesn't come up. My kids, you know, go through things. But how I deal with them is so different that it doesn't have to create this huge struggle and in my life. And I don't have to become a victim to it. See, a lot of times, too, that happens where we're just so weighed down with the all the burdens that we feel are placed on us as parents. And but as far as the I forgot the trade of thought. I was talking about the Breaking the Cycle CD the being present. But just to really be present and hear our children listen to our kids. We're so busy. And it's not that our intention is not to be. We really just don't know how. Because how many of us really know how to sit still and be present with ourselves? To just be quiet and just to be with ourselves. So once we learn how to do that, then we can be with our kids, and they'll feel us there. I'm sure we've all been with to a convention or a sales thing or something where, and I know I used to do this, where, you know, you're speaking to someone or might be at a party, and you're speaking to someone, and they're talking to you, but in a flash, their sight goes to someone over your shoulder, and they're out of there, and they're on to the next person. They really weren't with you at that moment, so they weren't present. And that's what I mean. Our kids feel it. And they also feel our agitations and our disappointments and all of that before we even might know that they're there. They feel them energetically, and they act accordingly.
Now, Joanne, I knew we were going to have a very, very engaging conversation, and we're running up on our last 19 minutes. So I do want to have an opportunity to talk about a very important topic that's related to parenting, and that's in the realm of adult children, because I know a lot of parents are struggling with the fact that adult children, a parent may feel like they've done everything and they've helped the child to mature and grow, and they just want them to be independent and, you know, get their lives together. But unfortunately, adult children may end up back at home, or adult children may end up leaning on the parent quite a bit, or the adult children may even have young children of their own, and the parent feels obligated to help that adult child and maybe even help them financially raise their children. And, you know, how can parents get a handle on, you know, keeping things together when their adult children just won't go away? And I don't mean go away in the realm of, you know, just leave me alone, disappear. I mean they can't just seem to find their independence.
Well, I have heard of many cases and have spoken to some people I know who this has happened to them personally, and what I see is, or what seems to be the common thread, is that the children have been taught the codependent relationship, so they don't know how to be independent. Because, you know, in order for kids, for example, as our kids are growing and teenagers and things like that, you know, we're all doing the best we can, but I noticed in myself too, and I can still catch myself, the biggest complaint with parents is that the kids aren't responsible, that they don't take responsibility. But they don't need to, because we do it for them all the time. We take responsibility for them. We, you know, might get them to want to have them clean up the basement or pick up their room or bring their laundry down, and we've asked them and they've not done it, but we just go ahead and do it. And they know we're going to do it. So they never have to take responsibility or do anything. So with the independence thing and when they leave, I mean, anytime, I don't know the scenario or a specific one that I can go over, but if the parents have continually offered this saving of a kid, then that will extend into the child then becoming an adult, and they just always kind of retreat back to home because they know everything's going to be taken care of there. They've never had to
really
do anything on
their own. Well, what if the child just continues to come to them and ask, and, you know, the parent just feels bad and they reluctantly try to help? What if the child is, I mean, what if the parent is not offering, but they're also just not saying no?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, they're not standing up and saying no, and not in a mean way, but going, you know, it's time, you know, Charlie or whatever your name is, you know, I've helped you before, but, you know, this time I can't. But the guilt that parents go through when they say no to their kids, they can't handle, so they give in.
And how do they handle the guilt?
Well, that's what this inner workout, this thing that I teach, is about: going to the guilt, really feeling it, and then releasing it. Getting all of this stuff, all of in the nooks and crannies, right down to our big toe, we hold on to guilt, resentments, disappointments, hurts, and all of these things. And that's what causes how we behave and why we can't change that, you know, why we lose it or why we always give in and can't say no. And so it's about reteaching ourselves how to do it differently, but it's a lot easier when you don't have that within you that creates that reaction or that constant saying yes or what have you in the first place. It's not their responsibility to take care of the child. It's, they have nothing to feel guilty about. That's self-imposed, right? But it's still, it's hard to get rid of until you go to it. You have to go and feel it.
So what you're actually describing is tough love?
Some people do call it tough love. I guess it would be just to speak the truth. I mean, we talked about communication earlier and things like that. We're afraid to speak the truth. We're afraid to hurt somebody else's feelings. So instead we hurt ourselves continually in life when we look at it. But it's not about, you know, hurting somebody else's feelings or maliciously, you know, saying no, but saying, you know, look, Charlie, I know I've always done it before, and guess what? I taught you how to keep coming back, but this time I have to say no, and I believe in you, and I know you can do it on your own. You know, by constantly giving in and doing for the kids, we're really saying that we don't believe that they can do it themselves. We've taught them, and then they don't have the skills to do it for themselves once they get on their own. So at some point, yeah, you have to say no.
Now, let me ask you this in a different way. If that adult child has, you know, unfortunately brought a young baby into the world and, you know, just by a mistake they made, how can you say no to that adult child that's trying to raise an innocent baby that didn't have to be born? So, but what if the adult child is struggling with trying to raise that child on their own because they made that mistake? I mean, how much help should that parent give that adult child raising that baby?
Well, you know, for example, I'm not in that situation, but I know for myself with a 17-year-old, and if she came home, you know, tomorrow or next year or the year after, and she, you know, found herself in that position, she had nowhere to go, there is no question she would be here with me. You know, that is something for myself that I would be okay doing. And then, of course, the child going to try to get work and et cetera, and then eventually, hopefully, being able to get on her own. But the question is, we love our kids so much, and we don't want to see them hurting. And of course, if the choice is for them to be with us or out on the street, what choice is most parent going to make? And do we make ourselves wrong then for making that choice that, hey, we're going to help them out and have them live there? I'm not quite understanding the question. I guess from the point of view is the perception out there that it's not a good thing or that it's wrong for that to happen, for a parent to take in their child who has had a child?
Well, I mean, you answered it very eloquently. It was a great answer. You answered it exactly the way I meant it. And what I got from your answer is that absolutely you would take the child in, take your adult child in, but you would also, along that same line, try to assist your adult child with becoming independent and help them either find a job or find a manner of supporting themselves and their baby so that they could eventually leave your house and become independent. That's what I heard you say.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes. But I couldn't imagine myself, and this is, I'm just sharing from my own personal experience, I could never imagine myself shutting the door and saying, no, you can't come.
And that makes sense. That makes sense. And I agree with you in that opening the door and trying to help them get their lives together or trying to help them find their independence is probably what I would do too. But the longer you allow them to not be independent and continue to go through the cycle of making excuses, well, I can't do it because of this or that, then they're going to continue to stay in that dependent cycle.
Exactly. But the key is that the parent has allowed that cycle to continue by not saying, okay, so, you know, what's going on, communicating, well, you know, the job here. And eventually, you know, maybe down the road, then, you know, they'd have to give them perhaps a boundary or a timeline or something like that. But it's just constant to inspire them. If they're not wanting to go out on their own, or they don't believe the parent is going to kick them out, then they may not try, you know,
right.
to go and do anything on their own. But I think we want to empower our kids to, and by the most part, I think they want to be independent. I think sometimes, you know, that's another challenge of parents is our children become really the light of our life, the source of our joy and our happiness. And so when they leave, wow, do we have a void to fill? Or some feel. So this whole process and the whole point, I believe, is with children is we have to take care of ourselves first. We have to fill ourselves up with love and then overextend that to our kids so that there will be no void when they leave, you see, because we're still full. We've just extended that love and compassion and nurturing to our children.
And I know there's also a large onslaught of teenagers wanting to get pregnant. I kind of don't understand that, and I'm assuming it goes back to some of the things you said earlier, in that, you know, the communication is not there. They're not receiving the love that they need to be receiving from their parents, and so they're looking for love in a different way, and they think getting pregnant is the way to find that love.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all looking for it, and yes, I do believe that could be a reason why they do something to love, something that's going to love them back. We all want to be loved,
and
the question is, most of us were raised conditionally. You know, you get a cookie if you're good, and you don't if you're bad. You know. I'll love you when you're behaving, and I'm going to shut down, or I'm going to get mad when you're not. And they don't feel the love when we're in that place of shut down or mad. And so they think mm-hmm. they've done something wrong. They don't think they're lovable. I mean, how many people do you know that, you know, they don't feel worthy? They don't feel that they can receive love or that they're worthy of love, because that's what they felt when they were a kid.
And
so we're all out looking for the, pardon me?
I was just going to say, you just said something that to me touches so many things in the aspect, and I got to ask you this way.
Okay.
Because so many parents have a tendency to do exactly what you said. If you're acting and doing right, I love you. If you're not, I don't love you. Even though I love you, I don't show it. I don't say it, because the punishment is I can't do that for you. So how do you make that transition to make sure as a parent that even in the aspect of something of disappointment or from a discipline standpoint, that you make sure that you get that message across to your child that I'm doing this, even though you did this, I'm letting you know that I love you.
That you did what? Like that when you're disappointed?
Whatever it is, because... Whatever it might be, just like what you said,
okay. We
have a tendency to, when we do something good, we let them know we love them. But if they've done something bad, it's like the love is held back. We don't show them or say that we love them, and that's the punishment. How do we make sure, because if I would have gotten the I love you even when I did something bad, that would have made me not do the bad things to get the attention that I needed.
Right. Well, to share the experience that I do with my kids is they know that I love them no matter what. They know that. I love them unconditionally. And I couldn't learn how to do that as a parent until I learned how to love myself unconditionally. Because I wasn't taught that. I was taught, you know, I didn't get taught how to love myself, you know, certainly not if I was doing something not good, right? So one of the phrases that I share with parents or with anyone, and I know it's a phrase that a lot of people on this call, I'm sure, have heard, and I know I did as well, and it should be taken out of every parent's vocabulary and every teacher's vocabulary, because teachers are very important, too, in terms of inspiring our kids' self-worth and how they feel about themselves, and that is this: I'm so disappointed in you. If we could erase that phrase, have it not exist, because really how they are, who they are as individuals, as human beings, why is it all of a sudden we become a parent and we seem to feel like they need to perform or do or be or behave according to what we think, right? And so a lot of children feel that constant disappointment from a parent. And when they feel that, they certainly don't feel love. So to answer the question is to unconditionally love ourselves, to learn to really break the cycle of all, whether it's single parenting, whether it's co-parenting, parenting within a relationship, whether they're toddlers, teens, or older, it doesn't matter. But to really look at this topic of unconditional love, to really look at it, we can't possibly know what it is to unconditionally love our child, our spouse, or anybody until we know it for ourselves. And that's what I teach people to do, self-love, to connect to that part in them so that they can feel the love and don't shut it down no matter what anybody else does. And so their kids always feel the love from them. And other people feel the love. And it's very comfortable to be around. We probably know a lot of people who are connected to that place in them, that there's just this essence about them and energy that they're just so calm and peaceful and loving, authentically. And as a parent, when we can have that living in us, that's when we're going to change this huge, you know, the violent outbursts and things like that with our kids out there. Because we're going to teach them. We're going to inspire them and teach them by our connection, just like that little Dear Mom and Dad that I read from my website. It's so important that we learn that ourselves. And it takes some time. And I had to lock myself in the bathroom, no word of a lie, and have a little tantrum myself so I wouldn't lose it on my kids when they used to trigger me. So it's a process. This doesn't happen overnight. But it's doable. It's possible. And I know it because I did it myself. And it has changed my children. They know now what an unconditionally loving home is. And it's not that my parents didn't love me. Don't get me wrong. I know they did, but they didn't know how to love themselves to show the unconditional love to me, and that's what I've learned, and Colleen, my mentor, my friend, my colleague, developed this process that changed my life. I've been teaching it for 8 years. She's been teaching it for 15. Theinnerworkout.com, you can teach yourself. You don't even have to go to a coach, and it's just such a gift that we can give our kids to the world, but to ourselves first.
And, you know, Joanne, you are absolutely right, because I'm a life coach, and that's what I also teach my clients whenever I work with anyone. The absolute first order of business is to understand how to love ourselves. A lot of people just don't understand how to do that. And if you have to hire a coach, if you have to, you know, go to a psychologist or whatever, read some books, whatever the means are for you to learn how to love yourself, it all comes back to that, whether it's raising a child, whether it's running your life, whether it's changing areas of your life, whether it's being successful in your career, whatever it is, it all comes back to that point, because how you feel about yourself is going to be manifested out to others that you come in contact with. Whether it's children, coworkers, whoever it is, it's going to be manifested out into the universe, how you feel about yourself.
That's right.
And it's
so it's really interesting, because I know that a lot, you know, with the judgments that we have about kids and how they dress and stuff like that, you know, my son knows. I mean, he's got the most funkiest way of dressing. He's just such a character, and I love it. I love it. It doesn't matter to me how he dresses, how long his hair is, or what color it is. I mean, it would have had I been who I was before, but he's his own person. Who am I to control how he chooses to express himself? It's not disrespectful. He's got a beautiful heart. He's a great kid. They both are. They don't do the, you know, maybe they've tried some stuff, but we talk about it. You know, they don't have to be in fear that they can't, but, you know, and so whether it's the bright yellow pants and the pink hair or whatever he chooses, but I know he's a great kid, and how he chooses to bring himself into the world is his choice. Now, when you have that reception from adults, it's great, but a lot of times, you know, they, a lot of heads turn. It's like, you know, kind of looking at them funny, and it might have a judgment around looking at this kid the way, you know, he's kind of put himself together as to who he is. And it's not the truth at all, but they treat him that way sometimes.
And I hate to jump in here, but believe it or not, we are absolutely totally out of time. And I want to thank you so much, Joanne, for coming on, and thank you guys for joining us this evening. This has been a wonderful show. You all have provided a lot of wonderful information. And as I said earlier, please join us on my blog. I'm going to post my blog and the website, my website and blog in the chat room. And we are going to have to sign off for now. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Tony.
Kathy, thank you so much. And Tony, and jcconnections.ca, theinnerworkout.com. It's got everything they'll need.
Great. Thank you so much. Join us on my blog, and we will have continuation of this conversation. Good night, everyone. Thank you, Tony.
Good night.
Good night.